At some point, people started to say, 50% of the chromosome is protein. That's a lot of filler material. Is the protein doing something? And people started to look at the proteins. And all of a sudden, they found, oh my God, we didn't understand this because we've been throwing away the proteins for 50 years. There was a new understanding of the relationship between the proteins and the DNA. In the experiments that revealed that DNA was self-regulatory, those were experiments that were done with pure DNA. They in no way reflected what was actually going on inside a living cell where the DNA was already complex with the proteins. When we put the proteins back with the DNA, we get another understanding. It changes our belief in what we describe as genetic control and genetic determinism. It goes like this. Up to now, we've been talking as if they were controllable elements that genes turn on and turn off. And the truth is, a gene is simply a blueprint. That as a blueprint, it has no on and off, just as much as an architect's blueprint doesn't have an on or off. The blueprint is not self-actualizing. If it were, the architect would only have to throw the blueprint at the building site, and the self-actualizing blueprint would build the building. And yet the reality is, no, a blueprint is just information. Now the question is, what activates the information? Well, in this case, the contractor who reads the blueprint and then decides to act upon the blueprint. Well, when we go back to the cells and the DNA and we say the DNA is the blueprint, but what reads it? What's the contractor that is involved with activating the expression of a gene? It turns out it was the protein that we threw away for 50 years. All of a sudden, there's a new insight in understanding the nature of the chromosomes. Chromosomes are actually DNA strands surrounded by a sleeve of protein. Basically, what this says is as follows. The blueprints to make the parts of the human body are encoded along the length of the DNA. Each blueprint is referred to as a gene. But the genes cannot be seen inside the cell because when the DNA is in the nucleus of the cell, the DNA is covered by a sleeve of protein. If you want to read that blueprint, you have to remove the protein first. This was not recognized before, especially in experiments where you throw away the protein and just study the DNA. When we go back to the living system, we realize that in order to get to the blueprint, you have to remove the protein sleeve. To control a gene, then, is actually not controlling the gene, but is controlling whether the sleeve is on or off. Yeah, but now you already have some insights as to how can I control the sleeve. And it goes back to this. Remember, the sleeve is protein. That protein can change its shape when it responds to environmental signals. So consider this. In the resting state, when we're not reading a gene, the protein sleeve is covering up the DNA. And the gene is not active. You can't read it. It's underneath the protein sleeve. But now we go back to that situation I described. A signal shows up in the environment, is read by the receptor of the cell. And the cell wants to engage a behavior, but can't do it. Why? The proteins aren't present in the cell. So what we need to do is we need to get the blueprint to make the protein. Well, here's how it works. The signal from the cell membrane then travels to the nucleus. And in the nucleus, the signal complements with the specific proteins that cover the gene that we want to use. So when the signal binds to the chromosomal proteins, it causes the sleeve to pop off. When the sleeve pops off, the blueprint's exposed. Then the cell makes a copy of the blueprint as it's exposed. The copy is called RNA. The RNA is the actual physical blueprint that leaves the nucleus of the cell and goes into the cytoplasm of the cell. In the cytoplasm of the cell, there are protein devices that will read the RNA blueprint and create the new protein. So basically, it says this, genes are neither on nor off. In truth, genes are either covered or uncovered. But the cover and uncovering is the character of the protein. And therefore, if you want to use a gene, you actually have to regulate the protein sleeve. But the regulation of the protein sleeve is controlled by signals that are sent by the membrane from perception switches. So all of a sudden, we go from a biology where we looked at the genes as these devices that control their lives. People think that if they walk down the street someday, one of their genes is going to turn on them, and this gene is the culprit, that this gene caused the cancer. When it turns out, no, that's not actually how it works. The gene can only be activated when it's in response to an environmental signal mediated by the switches in the membranes, which are called perceptions. So when we look at this and put it all together, it says that the environmental signal via the perception switch sends a signal to the nucleus to uncover the gene to allow us to make a copy of the gene and then make proteins derived from that gene. What this basically says is genes control nothing. Genes are responsive to the signals of the environment. This new field of study is something called epigenetics. And in fact, this is what I was studying back in 1977, even though epigenetics is a term that is probably no older than 1995. Almost 20 years before the field of epigenetics was established, I was already seeing the action of epigenetics in my clone cultures. How was that? Yes, put my culture in condition A, environmental condition A, the environmental signals selected the genes to form muscle. Take the same cell and put it in environment B, and the environmental condition in that culture selected a completely different set of genes and caused the formation of bone. And thirdly, a completely different set of environmental signals leads to the activation of genes that provide for fat. The control of gene activity by environmental signals is the new science of epigenetic control. Well, most all of us and the students I was teaching in medical school are very familiar with a concept called genetic control, which literally means control by genes. The new understanding of epigenetic control is just barely making itself into the public domain at this time. It's still an identity of a mechanism that is understood at the leading edge of science, and even most scientists still don't understand the concept of epigenetics. Epigenetics is the mechanism by which we control genes. Now, the interesting aspect about epigenetics is mediated by environmental signals through perceptions. So rather than the old belief that everyone bought into, that genes control life, and this is the big problem for the Human Genome Project, because when it was revealed there were only 25,000 genes, the reason why that was a failure to them was that it obviously takes more than 25,000 genes to make the complexity of a human. And so they didn't understand the control mechanism because they believed the genes were controlling themselves, and there obviously weren't enough genes. Now we find that epigenetics exists. Epigenetics is, in fact, the equivalent of a second genetic code. It's not secondary genetic code. It's actually a primary genetic code because epigenetics can change the readout of the genes. Well, we used to think one gene makes one protein. With studies on epigenetics, we find this. By the diversity of environmental signals, there's a diverse response that can be manifest from each gene. In fact, we now know this, and this is an outstanding fact, that through epigenetic mechanisms, a single gene can provide for over 2,000 different proteins, because epigenetics is the reader of the blueprint. Epigenetic mechanisms can cut the blueprint into pieces and splice it together in a different configuration and get a completely different readout from the same blueprint. Epigenetics can only read part of a gene and ignore the rest of the gene blueprint, again changing the product. And all of a sudden, there's this new genetic code that starts to come into our understanding, a genetic code that is so powerful that it is a contractor that can read the genes and change the structure of the organism. Well, here's an interesting fact. The genes in a human are virtually identical to the genes in a chimpanzee, which are virtually identical to the genes in a rat. All of us have the same kind of building blocks. But if we all have the same genes for the same building blocks, why don't we look the same? And the answer is because how the organism is constructed is not based on the genes that make the building blocks. It's based on the epigenetic control. that humans have a different epigenetic readout of the building blocks than a chimp. So we can use the same building blocks, and somebody can create a chimp, and using a different way of assembling the same building blocks, you can create a human, and even further altering the assembly of the building blocks, you can actually provide for a rat. And so it turns out that the control of life is not built into the genes that provide for the building blocks. The genes that we have studied from the beginning of the understanding of the genetic code to the very moment. That's where most research is involved. However, the field of epigenetics is changing our emphasis. We're now beginning to recognize that rather than messing with the genes, it's epigenetics that can alter the readout of the genes.